Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Where are you coming from in this one?
Your 100% essential download.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
You let this get out of control.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself, Simon and Martin O'Neill discuss Arsenal's victory in the North London Derby. Have the Gunners overcome their biggest hurdle in the title race after beating Spurs? And are Pep Guardiola's Manchester City showing any signs of slipping up after they beat Forest 2-0? Liverpool are all but out of it after drawing with West Ham at the weekend, but was a touchline tiff between Klopp and Salah the dying days of two Anfield legends? This is Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Their first back-to-back wins on Tottenham soil since George Graham was manager back in the late 1980s. There are high fives and hugs all round from the team in red and white.
You were at the North London Derby, were you not, yesterday?
I was.
Blagging it.
I was blagging it. That's what I was doing, yep.
Yeah.
Sitting there talking to a good friend of ours, Rob Segal. And
He is a good lad.
Yeah, and with Chrissy Hughton. And nice to see Chris, fresh from his exploits in the African Cup of Nations.
You didn't nip up at half-time to have a cup of tea with Daniel?
No. Daniel was busy. I didn't feel that the necessity to go and have a chat with him after they were 3-0 down at half-time. Didn't think that was going to be received that well.
He must have wondered what had hit them, Martin. What it all adds up to is this. For those who don't know, and I'd be amazed that anyone tunes into a show like this and doesn't know what happened the day before. Tottenham were 3-0 down against Arsenal at halftime, but Arsenal, who went to Tottenham's place yesterday, didn't choke in the second half, but they began to sweat a fair bit because Tottenham got back into it. They ended up winning Arsenal by 3-2. And that, as a result of that, Arsenal sit top this morning on 80 points. Manchester City, who won at Nottingham Forest, sit on 79 points. And now the run-in, which is all important. And on that, Guardiola, but first Arteta, spoke about this being a fight to the very end.
Well, I've seen that the whole season, and they give me the reason to believe that every single day. And obviously, we are right on it. And motivation and what is ahead is beautiful, so obviously, we are expecting that they're going to have a real goal.
Well, we prefer they lose, but we cannot control what they do. They make a good result, but it's 4 games left. So I think it's not going to lose any point. So, and we know exactly what they have to do.
4 games left, Martin, for City, 3 for Arsenal. Arsenal have Bournemouth at home, Manchester United away, Everton at home. Manchester City, Martin, have Wolves at home, Fulham away, Tottenham away, and West Ham at home. Will Tottenham hand Arsenal the title with victory over City, do you think?
It's very possible if that's the case, but it's so difficult to call. You know, the 3 games, you're talking about points that they may or may not drop. I really can't call it, I must admit. Really can't. You would say Manchester City, because if they win their games, they take the title. But Arsenal have chased them the whole way and have been brilliant this season.
It doesn't look, Martin, like City are blinking at any time soon.
Well, that was a big win for them yesterday. Really big win, because they could easily have dropped points there. Nottingham Forest played very well in the match.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of moments in the game that went Manchester City's way, more by possible good fortune than anything else. So that was a big win. They've had a couple of that coupled with their victory at Brighton as well too, which ended up being seemingly an easier game than they would probably anticipate it.
Yeah.
Those are big wins away from home. So but Manchester City, as everyone has talked about, have been around the block before, so perhaps maybe that might have some effect.
Simon and I sat here on Friday, mm-hmm. Martin, and it was another Martin Keown, mm-hmm. who set the switchboard on fire when he suggested that Tottenham are too obsessed.
What do you mean, literally?
Literally. Tottenham are too obsessed with their North London rivals rather than themselves. This was Keown's take on it.
I'm just saying their motivation was always about stopping Arsenal from winning something. How about having your own set of ideals, your own goals, set your own targets?
And you think that's still the primary motivation?
I'm afraid it is. And it is, Jim. While look at how many years these fans have been without a trophy. But 1991 was the first real, the last time we could say it was a trophy.
You almost
sound
as if you feel sorry
up.
For them.
Well, we're looking at nearly 40 years these fans have had.
Terrible.
It kills them every time Arsenal win a game. I've been around for, I have Spurs fans, and they say, look, it's ridiculous. Arsenal keep winning. When they were on that 11-game run, I was bumping into Spurs fans saying, I said, well, look, you're doing
so
okay yourself.
Basically,
forget about
Arsenal
us.
Live
what's your motivation,
Arsenal
you Spurs
live
fans?
Arsenal live rent-free in Tottenham fans and Tottenham managers and Tottenham owners and
something
Tottenham
like that,
players'
yeah.
minds.
It went mad, I have to say. Simon, when you look at it, in that penultimate game of City's season away at Tottenham, if Tottenham are out of the Champions League by the time City come calling,
yeah.
is the motivation bigger to win or lose, do you think?
I think they're professional footballers, so I think you'd like to think that the manager is motivated by putting out a performance that's befitting of the club given the opposition that they're playing against. I mean, the fundamental facts of the matter is, watching the game yesterday, is Arsenal were a better side than Tottenham. They're a more accomplished side. And Manchester City are a better side than Tottenham. And Tottenham are a work in progress. They're not at that level at this moment in time, despite all of the background noise about how they play and the competitivity of the North London rivalry. Martin's point on Friday was a sort of childish, sentimental point. If it was directed at fans, we all know that the rivalry between the fans is there. But Martin didn't make that point. Martin made the point that it's in the minds of the officials of Tottenham, the players, the managers. We all know, no one in this room would suggest that the Tottenham fans would not like to get one over on Arsenal every opportunity they possibly could, and vice versa.
Yeah.
We weren't really talking about the fans. We were talking about the intellectual capital behind the club, which is the manager, the players, and their attitude. And Martin was suggesting that the players of Tottenham Hotspur now and in the past, and the manager and the owners, were actually more worried about stopping Arsenal from doing something than doing something themselves. And I don't concur with that view, and I don't know what Martin thinks.
I totally agree with you. And I think that... Tottenham Hotspur do not set out every single season with a strong ambition to stop Arsenal from winning something. I can't see it. They've got their own ambition. The fact that they might not have won something for quite some considerable years still doesn't stop that ambition from flowing every pre-season. So I don't get that.
Yeah, but Martin, say that penultimate game for Manchester City at Tottenham, and it's 0-0 with a couple of minutes to go, and Manchester City score. The Tottenham fans will be applauding, won't they?
And I'm sure they probably will be, but it's not. Do you think that's in the mindset of Postecoglou to go out and say, well... And
would it be?
Not at all. No. Absolutely.
Because it's an odd dynamic, isn't it?
No, he wants to win the game. He certainly wants to win it. And the consequences are... And it's, you're telling me the consequences of let's say Tottenham happen to win the game and then Arsenal take it as a result. That's not going to affect people. You know, Arsenal winning the league, they very nearly did it last season. They faltered at the end, and they've battled right through here now at this moment. Tottenham Hotspur, actually, I think the fans will just be jealous of what's happening over there.
Yeah. Let's put it out there. I mean, Tottenham fans, how do you feel about that? Because the penultimate game for Manchester City is at your stadium, is at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Is that in your minds? If it looks like nip and tuck with Arsenal and say 0-0 with a couple of minutes to go and Manchester City were to score against you, would you be happy about that? In the light of the fact that it would probably end up denying Arsenal the title. And also at the moment, Manchester City, how do you feel about your side at the moment? You go to Forest and you win. Is it your belief that your side under Pep are just not for blinking?
Hard-edged, hard
hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
A number of you getting in touch with your own thoughts on the run-in from a Tottenham point of view. There's Joe. Jim, I was at the game yesterday. The Tottenham fans were saying to me they'd happily lose 8-0 to Manchester City if it stopped us, Arsenal, winning the league. Such a bizarre mindset, says Joe, the Arsenal fan. Going to come to some of the callers who have made it to air in just a second. You're going to join us live on air in a second. I'm talking about Dom, the Arsenal fan, Spencer, the Arsenal fan. Hold tight for a second. Simon, you were there yesterday and you watched some of the play, obviously close up and personal. What was your take on what you saw from a Tottenham point of view?
I think first, from an Arsenal point of view, I think Arsenal are a very accomplished side. And, you know, I think they're on a slightly different level to Tottenham are, so I'm not surprised that the result was what it was. But I looked at certain players. I thought Maddison was disappointed. I was disappointed in him. I was disappointed in Spurs, to be honest, despite the fact that they dominated possession at times. They huffed and they puffed. And they had a goal disallowed to bring them back equal in the, you know, equal in the game. But I looked at certain players out and I thought, for you guys to kick on to the next level, you're going to need to see a little bit of a change-up. You know, Timo Werner's like a speedboat without a brain. You know, Ben Davis and Pedro Porro are decent players, but they're not going to get you to the next level. So I was, and I thought Son wasn't much in the game at times. Missed a sitter in the first half, and obviously got him a penalty to get him close back in the game. And it was all about Arsenal and Arsenal's controlling of the game. They were professional, they were accomplished, they knew what their jobs were. They let Spurs huff and puff and take all the energy in the game, and then went upfield and scored goals. And only when Arsenal almost, this sounds like a rather silly comment, almost when Arsenal found it as easy as they were beginning to find it, they let Spurs back in the game. Spurs back in the game.
Yeah. As I said earlier on Friday, Martin Keown certainly set the place on fire by saying Tottenham are too obsessed with their North London rivals Arsenal rather than themselves. Was that the case yesterday? Dom's a big Arsenal fan who I think was there. Dom, good morning.
Yeah, morning boys. You okay?
Good, thank you, mate. What do you want to say? What do you think of what Martin said Friday?
Listen, no disrespect to you guys there. Obviously, you support your own teams. Simon, you support Palace. Martin, obviously, you're Celtic through and through. Unless you've experienced it, unless you've been through it, I've been going to Arsenal 36 years now. I was there yesterday. And over the years, honestly, I've got Tottenham mates. They only focus on us. If you look at the past and the history, when we won the league there in 1971, we won the league there in 2004. When we won the league there in 2004, they equalised against us 2-2. They celebrated like they won the World Cup, but they didn't realise, like what Thierry Henry said, we still won the title. They were celebrating because they got a draw against us and forgot that a draw was enough to win the title. They only focus on us. I was there yesterday, and this is the God's honest truth, but there was fans there with Man City shirts on. I counted three. They were wearing Man City shirts. Now,
What fans? What fans?
Tottenham fans. Before we was going into the entrance, they was opening up their tops. They had Man City tops. Opening up their jackets. And some of them had Man City tops on. So it's quite embarrassing. What Martin Keown's saying, what you've got to realise, Martin Keown, he's Arsenal through and through. And he's lived it. He's breathed it. We have dominated over the years when it comes to trophies with Tottenham. We took their captain, Sol Campbell, off them. The first season, he won the double. Like I said to you, we've won the title. They're 71, 2004. When a Tottenham are going to earn their own success, they've always lived in our shadow. They never, even if you go down to this top four situation, right?
Yeah.
Arsenal are going for a title, right? They're not going for a title. They've bottled it on the top four. They're not competing.
Yeah, but Dom, that might be the case with fans, mate. But when Manchester City go to Tottenham in the penultimate game of their season, obviously, Ange Postecoglou and the players want to beat Man City. The fans might think differently, but Postecoglou and the players want to beat Manchester City and will do everything in their power to do so. You surely agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I will say this. Players like Richarlison, is it, the centre-forward, Romero, I don't think they give a monkeys, to be honest. I don't think they're not Tottenham through and through. They'll just play, and obviously that's Arsenal's hope, that players like them, they don't give a monkeys. But honestly, if you look at Jamie O'Hara, the Muppet you have on the Talk Sport sometimes, look at him the other day. Let's derail Arsenal's season. Let's do this. How about let's try and get top four? Let's do our own success. They only focus on us. And also, another point, boys, that you're getting wrong. Everyone keeps saying that Tottenham have got to beat Man City. If we keep our goal difference, draw. We don't. We only need a draw.
Yeah.
We only need Man City to draw. And as long as we keep our goal difference, we'll win it.
So, fair enough then, Dom. Good points from you and interesting points. I wonder what John, the Spurs fans, thought of it all. John, good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, John. Were you listening to Dom there, the Arsenal fan? What was your take on it all?
Absolutely. To be honest, last Friday, obviously, Martin, what he did was just trying to antagonise the Tottenham fans. Fair enough. He's an Arsenal boy. He's very blinkered. But, like, you're asking ridiculous questions. Last Friday and today, it's like, do you want us to be poke you in the left eye or the right eye? We don't want either. We want to win. We want to win, and that's the end of it. Yes, obviously, we don't want Arsenal to win, but our priority is winning. That's our rivalry. It's a stupid question. It's a stupid debate.
What was your takeaway from yesterday, John?
Obviously,
when you lost 3-2.
Yeah. Not great at all. We threw it away in the first half. I don't know. It wasn't great. At the minute, Arsenal are a better side than us. I'm not going to deny that. But the point is, this isn't the point. The point is the question, the debate today. You're asking us, do we want to be poked in the left eye or do we want to be poked in the right eye?
Well, are you telling me, John, you're not really that bothered? Who wins it, whether it's Arsenal or Man City?
Obviously, I would prefer Arsenal not to win.
Well, that's the whole point, isn't it?
No, but that's that doesn't mean that I will want the game to be thrown. I don't want Arsenal.
No one's saying the game to be thrown, but you're one of the many Tottenham fans who would rather Arsenal don't win it, and you'd rather that Manchester City win it because you don't want your North London rivals to win it.
It's a very small margin. I don't want that plastic. I don't want that plastic Man City to win it either.
Fair enough. John, listen, thanks for the call. Martin and Simon are sitting beside me. We'll take one more. Nick's a big Tottenham fan. Nick, what do you want to say?
Oh, good morning, guys. Thanks for getting me on.
Morning.
Right. I want to kind of like make a few points in regards to yesterday's game because I'm a little bit frustrated. Everyone's saying many things and they're not looking at so many obvious things and it's really frustrating. Now, firstly, I'm going to get this straight. Spurs were the better side yesterday. There's no doubt about that. Arsenal came.
Sammy's shaking his head beside me, and he was there, Nick.
He can shake his head as much as he likes. He's going to give his head a wobble, I think, because Arsenal set up like as if they wanted to play on the counter.
Which they did. We took
it to them. Well, you know, we took it to them, and at the end of the day, they got lucky with the own goal. That changed everything. But my issue is with the second goal, because most of the time, VAR will go back to see if there was a foul in the build-up. And Kulusevski was clipped, regardless of what anyone wants to say. They never bothered going back to take a look at that to see he was clipped. He tried to stay up, and because it looks like a dive afterwards, it doesn't matter. That's what VAR
was. You're taking it, Simon. You were there.
I think there was a case, but he didn't go down, so I think there was a case to answer. But as far as I talked about the two sides, of course Spurs are going to be huff and puff. They're playing at home in front of 60,000 fans in the furore of a North London derby. But when it comes down to quality and the way that Arsenal set up to negate what Spurs did, Spurs huffed and puffed and had loads of possession in the first 25 minutes, and they had 79% possession. But when it came down to it, Arsenal were clinically better, more professional, more accomplished, and Spurs were not the dominant side in that side. They might have dominated the ball, but when it came down to it, Arsenal were a better side. And I'm a neutral. And
Nick,
I'm actually and anything,
neutral.
I'm slightly biased towards Spurs.
I get it. Nick, Simon says, you know, quite simply, Arsenal were more accomplished.
Not at all, because they had the help of the officials. Van der Ven's goal, if
the
you
help
look
of the
at
officials.
It properly...
In what way?
I'm sorry to say, but VAR is there to try and manipulate games.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's very, very clear. They didn't give us the chance with Saka's goal, where... he was clipped. Kulusevski was clipped. Go back and take a look at it. They do
so
it.
So you're saying that VAR conspired against you?
I think they do it in every game. They might do it against Arsenal next week. You know, I'm just saying, if you look at yesterday, I mean, the penalty. How did Oliver not see that? He's right in front of him. He's nearly taken his nuts off.
But for whatever reason he didn't see it and the VAR intervened. So this conspiracy, these conspirators, who are they and why are they doing it? Because now you're suggesting they're doing it randomly. It is
money.
A conspiracy put together by technology.
Money. Betting.
Oh,
betting.
It's money.
Yes, you've
okay.
got to try and influence the game. Yesterday, Spurs were the better side. No doubt about that. Arsenal got lucky. The only good goal they scored was Kai Havertz. Brilliant in the air. Good finish. But the other two, one was a gift. The other one is...
So were Spurs' goals? I mean, their goalkeeper did a Burnley.
Yes, he did, but that's at the end of the game. When you give someone a go after the first 10 minutes, you've already turned the momentum against you. You're already in trouble. It's different if someone did it in the 80th minute, okay. You know, when you're 3-0 down.
Good old Nick. Conspiracy theorist, hard at work this morning. Two contrasting stories regarding the two Merseyside clubs. What's going on at Liverpool? You look at the situation where Jurgen Klopp heading on out, not in the way he would have wanted, and the situation with Mo Salah. What is going on there? In the meantime, Everton beat Brentford to mathematically secure their Premier League status. We shall get to that. But Martin O'Neill in the studio with Simon and myself this Monday morning. We're live in TalkSport. We're streaming live in YouTube and Facebook. If you want to watch the show, and many of you do, you can head over to the official TalkSport channel on those platforms. Many questions coming in, actually, Simon. I'll fire a few of them at you. You're straight from the North London Derby yesterday. There's one, Simon. Are Tottenham capable of ever truly knocking Arsenal off their perch? You look at it, and I know where the question's coming from. 20 points adrift, is the gap widening again?
What perch? I mean, if you're talking about the competition between Arsenal and Spurs, I thought that we just discussed that Spurs are trying to row their own boat. Arsenal haven't won anything yet. Arsenal won the COVID Cup in 2020. And in between now and then, they haven't won anything. So I don't draw the comparison. But between the two sides, Arsenal were a better side. They spent £250 million every summer for the last two or three summers. And Tottenham, in order for Ange Postecoglou to be able to pivot and have a better and have more flexibility in the players that he utilises and the systems that he plays, he needs better players. Declan Rice was a £100 million signing. Those sort of players that Arsenal have bought have made Arsenal a far more formidable outfit than they were the season before, you know, last season. So all of those things come into play.
So is it all about getting £250 million put to one side, spend that, and you'll become Arsenal?
Well, it gives you half a chance, doesn't it? I mean, let's have it right. I mean, Man City didn't become Man City because they developed young players through their academy, did they? They bought players. Manchester United haven't retained some position of relevance, albeit smaller than it ever was once before, because they didn't spend £1.6 billion pounds. And so on and so we go. And Tottenham, with Postecoglou, are a better watch than they were, but there's still questions to be asked about how significant Tottenham are in the Premier League in terms of taking something home and putting it in their trophy cabinet.
Martin, you know what it takes to manage the very best. You've been there, done it. Could do it again. Who knows? Jack, coming in with a message. And I know Simon and I interviewed Postecoglou not that long ago. He did like half an hour with us live on Zoom. So we're not now knocking him down when adversity comes calling. But Jack says, Martin, please discuss Ange this morning. He seems to evade scrutiny from the media and has been so poor tactically for months now. Out of both cups early, no European football. We've fallen out the top four, having been top after 10 games on 30 points. So that means we've only taken 30 points in 23 league games. We had 15 days to prepare when Arsenal played four games in that time, and we were 3-0 down at halftime. Please discuss this with Martin.
Okay, yeah, so...
So his point is, does Ange get a bit of a pass where he should be coming in for some serious criticism and scrutiny this morning?
Okay, well, I think you'll have to take this back to when he took over. Harry Kane left, so they didn't really have what you would call an out-and-out centre-forward. And as a consequence, I felt that that was going to be a difficult season for them. I didn't think that they would finish in the top four at the time because he was trying to assert his own authority on proceedings. He would have the style of play that he was used to playing at Celtic, and he would try and make that work. They got off to a terrific start of the season, and I think after about 10 games, they were right up there with anyone. So expectation among Tottenham Hotspur fans was quite high. Secondly, they were playing very attractive football, so everybody seemed to be happy with it. And you asked a Tottenham fan at the end of October time, for instance, say, what would you settle for? Oh, we'll settle for the great football that we're playing now at this minute, and that'll be terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all of those particular things. Now things have changed a little bit, and they've changed Tottenham Hotspur's. I don't know whether he would be a spokesman for the rest of Tottenham fans. I think Tottenham fans will accept this season at this minute. I think there will be a part of a disappointment if they didn't finish in the top four, having been there or thereabouts the whole way through. But if fifth place actually takes you into the Champions League, then it's been a really decent season for them. What are the expectations for next year? That's a different thing.
But there's an allegation, Martin, that Ange doesn't have a plan B. Do you see that?
I mean, see, I never know what these plan Bs are. I genuinely don't know. I don't know what plan B is. In this sense, right, when do you use plan B? Is plan B something that managers get labelled with having no plan B? Because when do you use it? Do you use it when you're 2-0 down and then you change things and it doesn't work? You go 3-0 down, that's a poor plan B. Or do you change it at a stage in the game when you're trying to win a match and you make some substitutions? The substitutions eventually probably constitute like plan B. So I'm never sure.
Well, can I ask you, Martin, on that point then?
Yeah.
Could Spurs do to Arsenal what Arsenal did to Spurs yesterday, which was Arsenal decided to play in a very different way? Mm. Arsenal were a front-footed side in this game. Mm. They were much more reactive. They were prepared to wait for Spurs to come on and then catch them on the break or do whatever it is they felt they'd do. So it was a much more disciplined performance. Do you see that in Spurs' locker? Because that would be considered in some people's minds as a potential plan B.
Do I see what in their locker?
Well, I mean, Spurs' ability to play... Spurs seem to play one way, which is they go after the opposition, they play high up the field, and they play in a certain with a certain thought process. Mm-hmm. Arsenal play with that mentality. They go after the opposition when they're playing at home or against certain opposition. But against Spurs, are very disciplined, very organised, very structured, and were prepared to allow Spurs to come onto them. That's not Arsenal's normal game way of playing. They didn't play that game against Newcastle when they battered Newcastle at the Emirates. They went straight after Newcastle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but could you see Spurs doing that performance?
I think eventually in time. That they will have to.
Yeah.
They will have to, Sam. Absolutely will have to. This idea, where I disagree with Ange, and if he doesn't mind me saying so, is that he did say, well, set pieces are... He didn't say they weren't important. He said they were, but he said that we've got other things to address. And, and you do. But having said this, here's a point. Arsenal, a couple of seasons ago, played Brentford in the opening game of the Premier League. They got absolutely bullied. Set pieces, goals against them. Now, Arteta, somewhere along the way, has thought, do you know what?
We'll
have to do something. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll have to do something about that. Not only have they done something about it defensively, they've done something about it offensively.
Yeah.
So for all Arsenal's super, super play this season, they're the top team in scoring and goals. I think it's about 19 or 20. So that... They address that.
Yeah, from
Tottenham
kicks,
Hotspur
yeah.
will have to address these things.
We'll talk about this.
So then ultimately, that makes it a fair observation that when someone talks about a plan B, that Spurs' ability to pivot into a different style of performance is a fair accusation at this moment in time in their development.
Okay, yes. Here's the point. You're talking about Tottenham's approach to the game.
Yeah.
Arsenal knew that Tottenham would have the ball. Arsenal generally have a lot of possession. Sometimes Arsenal, when they play Manchester City, don't have that possession. But they were prepared because they had a bit of pace. They knew that tactically they were well tuned in into the game. I didn't see, I only saw the extended highlights of it. Simon, you were there at the game. But they felt as if they could break Tottenham down.
Yeah, they did.
They could sit back. Yeah. And that's fine to sit back
they
in
were
a game.
And controlled,
because,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Patrick's a Tottenham fan, Martin. A plan B is if it's not working mid-game. And then you change it. There's Eddie, a Tottenham fan. He had 2 weeks to sort us out defensively from corners, which has been an issue all season. Why has he not done it? If he'd done this, we probably would have won the game. We had better chances.
No, but plan B, it's as if to say managers don't make changes during the course of games. They do. They do. They might change a positional set. They might change personnel. And that might be constituted as plan B. But if plan B doesn't work, let's say you make the substitutions and it actually gets worse during the course of the game, and that means that you don't have a plan B. And I know that this is the way that you are described. This is the point. Managers do have plans during the course of games. You're not exactly sure when to use them. And if you haven't used them at the time that you think it's going to make the immediate impact, then you will be described as a non-plan B man.
There is a general suggestion, Martin, and I'm looking at the messages coming through, that Ange doesn't necessarily change his tactics
okay.
for a specific opponent. And there was no more specific an opponent for Tottenham than Arsenal yesterday.
I think those things will change. I think that you have to look at the end of the season. You sit down, you look to see where you could have improved in. Ange said after a Chelsea game, do you remember the time that they were down to 9 men? And his post-match comments were, "I'm not going to change for anyone. If we go down to 5 men, I'm still going to go forward." That's fine, and everybody applauded that there for the time. That's great.
Yeah.
You have to make adjustments in this Premier League. You cannot go. You have to look at it. You have to see this here. You have to see where you're strong. You have to see where you're weak. And you have to address set pieces. If you are conceding goals, just let's say you've had, as Simon told me, about 75% of possession. And you think to yourself, I'm going to break Arsenal down. I'm going to break Arsenal down. We're going to do it. And then the first time you can see the corner kick and you can see the goal. That's totally dispiriting. Mm. That's what that is. And that changes momentum of a game. So all of those particular things all constitute part of the game. You have to look at it at the end of the season and say, these are the things that we can improve on. We might have to get, as Simon mentioned, might have to spend a lot of money in getting some players in. Yeah. But you do make changes. In your mind, you will have to make some change. Adjustments, we'll call them, for want of a better word.
Adjustments. Let's call them that. Adjustments.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
West Ham will still feel that they might be able to finish in the top seven. Liverpool's season, like their manager's time in the dugout, is almost over. It's finished West Ham 2, Liverpool 2.
The moment Klopp announced it, that Friday morning, nothing was going to be the same again. Now, we knew that. Nothing was going to be the same again. Probably for Liverpool, from a football point of view, from within the club, from inside the club, etc., etc. Do you think the timing of it has had a real bearing on what's happened to Liverpool since then? Out of the Europa League, of course. No longer challenging, whereas before they were. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, this deck of cards has folded and it's gone against Klopp and it's gone against Liverpool. At one stage, we talked about quadruple. Mm-hmm. It's all gone pear-shaped.
Well, I don't agree with that. I don't agree. We don't know what the inside situation was, but it's seemingly, Klopp did not want to announce his leaving as early as he did. And I think the story was going to break. I'm getting that news coming through. Let's take that there as the case. And therefore he makes the announcement. And people thought, well, gosh, I'm sure he would like to have waited a lot longer than that there, because there's only so many times.
So you don't think there's any bearing on it?
So there's only so many times you can say goodbye.
So why is the season petered away?
But just wait here, yeah. But if you were having this conversation with me the day after they've just won the League Cup, and the emotion that particular day, he says himself it was one of the best days ever in his managerial career, and it will live for him forever, and he's won the big trophies. So at the end of it all, you would have said that night as they travelled back, this is a great time to have announced it. But I'm sure he must himself, every single time a game finishes at Anfield, when he goes to the crowd, he would normally have been doing that over the last number of years. Each time, I'm sure he's thinking to himself, well, it's a game less now. So if you're telling me that his announcement way back when it was is the reason for them falling away. I don't agree with
that. Well, let me phrase it a different way. Okay. Was the, say, the wave of emotion for Klopp's goodbye, was that only ever going to carry them so far?
Well, it's the same point you make. To me, when is too far? Because the League Cup happened a couple of months after he made the announcement. Therefore, it was still okay then. So, no, they've fallen away because they essentially... They haven't really been good enough to stay with Manchester City and Arsenal. That's the, and the results dictate that. So after a result, you can say exactly what you want. Oh gosh, Almighty! He should never have announced it until about a week or two ago. I'm telling you, we're in the results business, and results dictate what people think.
What's your take on it, Simon?
Well, my take on it is that the narrative that we're spinning is, or potentially being spun, is that directly after his announcement, there was always going to be a challenge for Liverpool, and nothing was going to be the same. But on the 26th of January, when he announced that he was going to leave, but for that weekend, Liverpool smashed Chelsea 4-1. They lost to Arsenal the following weekend. They beat Burnley 3-1. They beat Brentford 4-1. They beat Luton 4-1. They won the League Cup. They beat Forest 1-0. They beat Sparta Prague 5-1. They drew with City, and they beat Sparta Prague 6-1 in the three leg. So that doesn't look like much of a hangover to me. Mm. I think what happens is the FA Cup quarter-final against Manchester United, and they dominated that game, and they should have been out of sight. And somehow, something happened in the course of that game that seems to have changed the direction of travel for Man United, because everything seems to stem off the back of that performance. I'm not suggesting that's the only reason. I'm sure there's a multitude of reasons. But if we're going to spin it up, not us, I mean, ultimately, if the conversation is going to be spun up into, oh, it's ridiculous that he announced that he was leaving on January the 26th, then look at the next 10 games after that, because those 10 games were more of the same from Liverpool. Sparta Moscow were not mugs. They beat him 11-2 in the Europa League. 5-1 away.
So you look at it, though, and you see where they've got to now, though, Martin. Here he is, he's star player, obviously, arguably, Salah. And now we're looking at a touchline tiff at the London Stadium when he's putting him on in the 79th minute or whenever it was at the weekend. This is where it's got to. This is where we're at now, Liverpool. Whether you read anything into it, you don't. The announcement that it was going was made in January, and I accept that. And then the Carabao Cup win was in February. Now, but thereafter, it's been a downward spiral, has it not? I mean, Simon's saying, yeah, sure. No, they've gone here and there and they've won. Yes, they have, but it hasn't been the same. Well,
Simon highlights a game against Manchester United in the Cup, and I wouldn't disagree with that. I think you could actually, if you wanted to, pinpoint that there's a change in terms of results, and a change in the fact that they now can no longer win all the trophies that they thought they might have a chance of, although that was... pure speculation away back. But getting back to your point about the tiff, yeah, it's unfortunate really, because two iconic figures fighting with each other, or certainly verbally having a go at each other, is not a great scene, and not a great scene for Liverpool. Klopp has been a phenomenal manager there, and Salah's been a phenomenal player. Okay, Salah has been, I think it's been, and I've got no reason to disbelieve myself here, but I don't have any proof of it otherwise. But he seems to be an unhappy figure for a number of times. He's been left out of games when you think to yourself, your main player, your main lad could maybe win you some of those games. And I'm quite sure that Salah was probably really disappointed not starting this game that Liverpool probably in the last throws needed to win.
So you think that's what it was, and nothing more than that?
A tiff, as I said to you, Klopp has stayed out of it. Salah has mentioned something at the end of it all by saying, oh, listen, I don't really want to say that much. Here's your point. It's not a great scene to find two big figures at a very big football club arguing over who's going on. I've had situations myself as a manager where players are coming off really, really angry with me. I thought, well, I'll deal with that. I don't want them to make it a public thing. We can deal with it in the dressing room. But that's the point. I remember one in particular, John Hartson. I took John off in a game, John confronted me afterwards, and I thought he was right up to my face about why I took him off. And it was really because he hadn't run around. But overall, that's a kind of a joke. But at the end of the day, I thought he's right up here, and I thought physically, I know who's going to win this battle. So I tried to get a little bit of help from some of the other players who, that's the time that basically urging John to throw one on me. But there we are. But we
seriously?
Yeah. Oh, listen, I'm joking. I am joking in that sense. But they did side with John. So
they sided with John when Jackson confronted you.
Essentially, they went round the back and urging John on to continue the argument, as most players would want to do when they feel their manager is under a little bit of pressure. Okay,
you worried?
Only physically for a second or two, but not in any other aspect.
The thing John, is, this was in the dressing room, was it?
This was in the dressing room.
Saturday wasn't Martin.
That's my whole point.
Well, this is it. He's about to put Salah on the 79th minute of a game very publicly.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit of a... Now, I mean, listen to it. Klopp spoke post-match, albeit very, very short. Salah was even shorter. First Klopp on the incident.
We spoke about it in the dressing room and with that, it's done for me. That's all. And that's it.
Salah strolled through the mix zone where you've got an opportunity to speak to players as they leave. He was even shorter. There'll be fire if I speak.
Well, he's not happier about going on at the moment. I think he was trying to get on the field before that there, and then West Ham scored the goal. And he's gesticulating to the managers to say, well, why are you doing this now at this stage? I should have been on before that. That's what I'm assuming has been said. And having had the experience of that there a couple of times, as I said to you, generally speaking, there was no fight of players going onto the field, so I've never actually encountered that. It was more players coming off the field that might be wanting to chunter a little bit beforehand.
Chunter, great word. Yeah. So the square root of goal, going back to the original point, Simon, is it's not working out the way Klopp would have wanted.
No, of course not.
It's not working out the way maybe John W. or Werner would have wanted from distance.
It's certainly working out well for Arne Slot. Because he doesn't walk into this wonderful harmonious environment where the fellas walked out winning three trophies, and he's got to follow that. So there's something in that for the next manager coming in. I think there's frustration. I think if you look at the altercation, it starts with Klopp saying something to Salah, which Salah reacted to. And I wonder if Klopp wasn't feeling so frustrated about recent results, because he talked about the result against Everton midweek and just said, we've got to play better football. So clearly he's frustrated with what's in front of him. He can't quite work it out himself how we've got to this position. And he's trying not to give people headlines, but trying to be as upfront as he possibly can in an interview about his unhappiness with what he's watching. So he's trying to walk this line between saying what he really wants to say and ultimately not giving people a narrative they can pull at. So you see the frustration that Klopp has. He said something that I don't recall Klopp saying much to players on the touchline that can involve an altercation. So he's frustrated. Salah, probably, the balance of power shifted, the manager's going. I wonder if a year ago when Klopp was in ascendancy and complete control of the player would have bitten back. And maybe Salah's motivations are different. I think it's immature and childish for a player to walk through the mixer zone and need to say that. He didn't need to say anything. He didn't need to tell you what he said. He chose to say it because that's about what players think they can say. That's about a lack of respect. You have altercations every day of the week in every training ground, be it before a match, in dressing rooms. There will be altercations.
But in general, Simon, when Klopp made his announcement, did he lose any of his authority?
When you lose games, you lose authority. That's what happens with football managers. And ultimately, you know, you're always going to have a diminishing scenario when someone goes out the door. We were running the argument when it suited us that the players would be absolutely unequivocally behind sending him off with every single trophy they possibly could.
We asked the question, would they be?
Well, if your dressing room is what you think it is, then ideally, in an ideal world, there's no reason why it shouldn't, because the players aren't just playing for a manager, they're playing for themselves. It's their own achievements. The players are the ones that tend to walk out with most of the plaudits and most of the recognition and most of the rewards, and managers get it, of course, by association. So I think nothing helps. I mean, you look at those games and you look at the Man United Cup quarter-final, you look at the Cup, the game 2 weeks later against United when they draw again with them. You know, they bounce off the game against United and they beat Brighton and they win the next two games. But look, it's a contributing factor. And of course, an altercation on the touchline, which is nothing really, is going to make headlines. Is Salah going to go? Yeah, I think he is.
Do you think he goes, Martin?
I really don't know that. I don't know. Simon makes the point. Would Salah have done that there had this time last year, for instance? I would say it's probably doubtful, but there is the feeling that the manager's leaving. And if you've had one or two tiffs with him in recent months, and it's just a boiling of frustration.
Yeah.
It's not a great scene, particularly with, as I said, two legendary figures at Liverpool. And if they were going to say anything, it should have been in the dressing room, which I'm quite sure it probably was. And Simon makes a really good point about Salah should have said nothing. He should have just passed on.
Just walked through, yeah. And forgotten about it. The most recent intel this morning is that Salah is set to stay at Liverpool. That's the latest word we're getting at the moment, that he is set to stay.
Welcome to the Coliseum of Confrontation. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.